following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And we made it to 2021. Unbelievable. But yeah, you and I, congratulations to us, because we survived 2020. We know that at least 351,000 Americans did not. Yeah, that's the death toll from COVID-19 alone in the United States, as far as we know. But we also know that in states like the one where I'm sitting, Florida, the numbers have been fudged, severely underreported. And those who tried to actually report the truth were persecuted. Rebecca Jones, I think is her last name. You all saw that her home was raided. She was a data specialist for the Florida Department of Health, and that was her job until she was trying to be accurate and give facts. And Governor Moron death sentence didn't like that at all. So he fired her. Basically, she went out on her own and put together her own COVID dashboard website, and they went after her again. And so, well, you know, she's now saying, I saw a post on Twitter over the holidays, something along the lines of, you know, looking for a new place to live where a governor won't have it out for me for, you know, for reporting facts, things like that. So we are still, we are in this very strange place. We're sort of in limbo, right? The new Congress was sworn in yesterday. Such as it is, I have some issues with it, but we can get to that in a little bit. I keep checking over here because our guest is supposed to be here any minute now, and I just want to make sure that he got the invite. You know what? I'm going to send him a direct message, I think, just to make sure David Dayen got the invite I sent, because it would really suck if he didn't. Just so you know who we're waiting for. David Dayen is one of the most prolific journalists out there. I don't know how he does everything he does, but he has been reporting on the news for a long, long time. And about a year, maybe 2 years ago, he became executive editor of the American Prospect magazine, and he's doing an amazing job there. So, hold on, let's see. I know I sent him this information. I'm just sending it again, just to make sure. Oh, you know what? Oh, damn it! I should have done something different. Anyway, so he's supposed to be joining us any minute now to help us through what happened over the weekend. Now, I was here, you know, Monday through Wednesday of the last 2 weeks, but a lot went on, and David Dayen does just a great job of reporting it. So we'll have him on in just a moment. I certainly hope. And in the meantime, let me do one more thing. Sorry, I should have actually done this before I went on the air. And I did, you know, I did. I sent it to him earlier, but I didn't double check and make sure he got it. So that's my fault. Anyway, so he'll be joining us in just a moment. It's hard to I can walk and chew gum at the same time. It's hard to tell, but I can. Anyway, so what happened over the weekend? The last time we met was last Wednesday, right? And what I was looking forward to was a Bernie Sanders filibuster, a filibuster of the veto vote. The vote to override the veto of the National Defense Authorization Act. This is what happens when I'm trying to do two things at once and not using any notes. And he actually did what he set out to do. The problem was his fellow Democratic senators didn't have his back. Oh, at the beginning, it looked like they did. At the beginning, Chuck Schumer got up there and spoke with him and spoke for him, spoke in support of Bernie Sanders' call for an immediate vote on a $2,000 individual payment in lieu of the $600 that passed in that COVID bill that Trump criticized as, you know, pathetic or whatever he said. Meanwhile, the number came from Trump's crew. So, you know, this is just typical of this administration. This is what he did. He didn't pay attention. He had so checked out ever since the election. He wasn't involved at all. And meanwhile, all of this stuff was going on. You know, the negotiations, all he was concerned about was they stole the election from me. Hey, Donald, they didn't steal the election from you. You lost. Loser. There's a winner and a loser. And, you know, I hear him. I hear this phone call that we learned of yesterday, in case you've been under a rock or something. Yesterday afternoon, The Washington Post released audio of this phone call that Donald Trump made to Greg Rappensperger. You know what? I need to get his name up here. The Secretary of State of Georgia. And in it, he went for an hour talking about Brad Raffensperger. Sorry, not Greg. Brad Raffensperger. And it was a barrage of lies, threats, and desperation from Trump trying to convince the Secretary of State, who, by the way, is a Republican, who said on the television today that, yes, he is a Republican and he will remain a Republican. And if the vote were held today, knowing what he knows, he'd still probably vote for Donald Trump because he's a Republican. Yeah, this is no hero, although he's doing the right thing. And what a low bar we're operating under when somebody doing their job the way they're supposed to do it is makes them a hero. Sorry, Brad Raffensperger is not a hero. He's somebody who's doing his job, and I give him credit for that, as I do Gabriel Sterling. But we'll get to him in a moment because I see our guest has arrived. So let me welcome David Dayen back to the show. Hey, David, Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you for joining us. I'm honored that you're my first guest of the new year. And as I'm trying to remind myself, just because we made it through 2020 doesn't mean we're in the clear yet. We have craziness. So I was trying to explain to the audience what happened. When we last spoke, I was here on Wednesday of last week, and I explained that Bernie Sanders was going to he had threatened to filibuster to do whatever it took to ensure that there would be an up or down vote in the Senate on the Cash Act, the $2,000 payments to individuals. And he tried his hardest. He did everything that you laid out in your piece at the American Prospect, at prospect.org, by the way. And it still wasn't good enough. He delayed the vote on the NDAA overriding the veto until like New Year's Day, but he still didn't get his vote on the $2,000 checks, did he?
No, he didn't. And he didn't have a ton of support from his own party on this, who, you know, they certainly could have tried to filibuster any of the three votes that had to be held to get through the override of the NDAA. And, you know, one of those votes required a 2/3 vote. That's what you need to override a veto. So if only half of the Democratic caucus said, you know what, we're not giving our votes to this until you give us a clean vote on the Cash Act, then, you know, Mitch McConnell would have a choice to make. You know, at this point, we're down to Georgia. I mean, you know, the elections there that could give Chuck Schumer control of the floor in the Senate would create a situation where Democrats would have no excuses left but to put that bill on the floor in both chambers of Congress. You know, you could make an argument that they worked all year on this defense policy bill. There are a couple good things in it. They didn't want to hold that up. Maybe there are some members that would say that. However, if they have now controlled the House and the Senate, and it's a known fact that there were 60 votes available, which both Democrats and Republicans said there were, mm-hmm. for $2,000 checks, then what excuse is left?
You're right. I mean, I looked at the list, and at the beginning, when Bernie first got up and then Chuck Schumer said, I'm going to speak in support of Senator Sanders. And it was like, whoa. And Chuck Schumer made the case for the $2,000 payment. And a number of the other senators got up and spoke in support. When it came down to it, five other senators stood with Bernie Sanders. They were the two senators from Massachusetts, the two from Oregon, and Chris Van Hollen. That was sort of a non sequitur. Now, I'm not complaining, but it was a surprise. But the rest of them from, I don't know, you name it, from Sheldon Whitehouse to, sorry, Kamala Harris, they sided with Mitch McConnell, which kind of pissed me off. And I understand what you're saying. They needed to get the NDAA through. Everything ended Saturday night at midnight because that's when the 116th Congress ended. And yesterday, the new Congress was sworn in. So they were up against the clock. But I keep thinking there's something more they could have done.
Well, I mean, at the very least, they could have forced Mitch McConnell to use every procedural tool at his disposal, including pulling members who were sitting at home out of their chairs and back to Washington. I mean, not even every Republican was needed to come to the floor to pass these things, including Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, who did not vote.
Wow.
NDAA override or any of the votes around that. They stayed in Georgia and campaigned. In Purdue's case, he stayed quarantined, I guess, because a staffer contracted the coronavirus. But, you know, at least make it hard on the opponents that you're trying to go up against in Georgia. Make Kelly Loeffler get on a plane and make her vote decisive. She got on Fox News on Sunday and couldn't even explain whether she was for the NDAA override or against it, because to be for it would be to break with Donald Trump, and she can't do that, yet it seemed like she wanted to.
Right.
So make her take that hard vote, right?
Right.
So you know, the strategy definitely left something to be desired. As far as $2,000 checks, it's important to note that they are not dead, right? We have a new Congress, and that bill can be introduced, taken up, and passed on the floor. It already passed with 44 Republican votes in the House. Everyone from Josh Hawley to Sherrod Brown said there are 60 votes in the Senate. Schumer said it as well for that bill. There is no reason, if Democrats get the majority in the Senate, there is no reason that they can hide behind to not pass that bill.
Exactly. And that they could take that up right away. And especially, as you said, it all comes down to Georgia. Tomorrow is that long-awaited January 5th with the two special elections in Georgia to fill both Senate seats. And if the Democrats win both of them, that means Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff both beat Loeffler and Perdue. Then it's 50-50. Kamala Harris, as the vice president, is the Senate president and the tiebreaker. That gives Democrats effective control of the Senate. And most importantly, it means Chuck Schumer gets to decide what bills come up for a vote on the floor, and not Mitch McConnell, who took great pleasures in calling himself the Grim Reaper of legislation. That's where bills come to die. The fact that the House passed that Cash Act just last week and he wouldn't even put it up for a vote, it tells you all you need to know about the Republicans. So things are looking okay in Georgia. It's a heavy climb for Democrats to win two Senate seats. But with all the shenanigans Trump is pulling, there are some who say he's driving vote away. Now, he's going there tonight for a rally, what he's calling a victory rally, because this is 1984 and we live in doublespeak time, I guess.
Yeah, we have a reporter that will be at that rally tonight. She has been there all week, and she has talked to people, Republicans who said that I voted for Loeffler and Perdue, but I don't think my vote's going to count because voting doesn't matter.
Right.
So, try to figure that one out. Like, why did you even bother to vote then? It looks very close in Georgia. The polls have been sort of trending in Warnock and Ossoff's direction, but it's still, limited. It's a 2-3-4 point race within the margin of error.
Right.
So who knows when we're going to, know the full outcome and when it will take to actually get those votes certified and get those members, sworn into the Senate. It'll probably take a few weeks. But at that point, Again, there would be nothing stopping the Democrats. I mean, 37 of those 44 members, those Republicans who voted for the Cash Act, are still in the House.
Right.
37 of those 44 House Republicans are still there. There's, you know, presumably they would still vote for that bill.
Right.
It's absolutely true that they would support it. And we know that Josh Hawley, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, they've all, you know, confirmed their support of this legislation. And there's believed to be many, many others behind them.
But now at the same time, tomorrow happens to be January 6th. And Wednesday. So tomorrow's the election. The next day, Wednesday, is January 6th. This is the day when throughout history, it's always been a ceremonial type of event where the Senate president, the sitting vice president at the time, opens the envelopes from all the states where the votes have been certified and counts the Electoral College votes. That's really his job or her job in the future, is to open the envelopes and be the like a figurehead overseeing this ceremonial proceeding. The Donald Trump and his minions have decided that they're going to try to stage a coup, and they got 140 members of the House saying that they will object to the count, and a dozen or so senators. There is an argument to be made that none of these people should have been seated yesterday when they were sworn in, right, or that they should be seated going forward. Because if those elections were not legitimate, then they didn't legitimately win their seats, number one. And number two, they're actively working to overthrow the government of the United States, which is treason, I think. Or sedition.
Yeah, and there's an actual constitutional amendment. It was one of the Reconstruction amendments that says that people who are engaged in treason cannot be seated in the House of Representatives or in the Senate. I mean, there's actual legislation that you could use to make that happen. So, or a constitutional amendment, I should say. This is likely to be dispensed with. Let's put that out there. The House and the Senate would have to agree to not accept those electoral votes. And I think every Democrat would accept those electoral votes.
Right.
So, you know, this is something that's just going to take up a lot of time. But I'm more worried about what's going to be happening outside the Capitol than inside it.
That's right, because Trump has summoned his cult members to D.C. Thankfully, the Harrington Hotel shut down, which they've all invaded. And I know I've stayed there as a progressive activist because it's the cheapest place in D.C. And progressives always stayed there. But apparently the Proud Boys have taken over the place and they said, no, we're shutting down for these days. But that's a sidebar story anyway. But they are all descending on D.C. for a march. I think it was Louis Gohmert who said we got to get violent, and then he tried to take it back. Wednesday could be a really scary day.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's reason for concern, and we're certainly going to be monitoring it, although maybe not out on the streets, but from the comfort of our homes. This is the consequences of essentially eliminationist rhetoric that we've seen for the last 30 years, well before Trump, but certainly fueled by Trump's abiding belief that there is no way that Democrats should be allowed to take power. And that's what's plainly being shown here. And it was shown, you know, in 2000, and it was shown in other times in history. The birther movement is another example of this. But what they're essentially saying is that Democratic victories are illegitimate.
Right.
By their very nature, just like sort of on they are facially illegitimate.
Yeah.
This is something that has the potential to really break down the structure of democracy. So it's terribly concerning. But I don't know that there's a way at this moment to bring it back from the brink. Now, you know, years are going to go on, and we actually had a very good piece by Robert Kuttner in our last issue about how to heal these divides and it's long work, painstaking work that doesn't happen quickly or easily, to get people, you know, to let their guards down and not see the opposition as a mortal enemy. But that is way into the future, and that is a best case scenario.
Yeah.
takes 10 years, 15
right.
years.
I just want to get through through January 21st. I want January 21st to come and go and everything sort of, right?
And Joe Biden's going to be president.
Yeah.
And we should be pretty clear about that. The danger is what happens after that and what happens when a significant portion of the electorate views the person in the White House as illegitimate. We've had this in recent memory. It was on the other side. George W. Bush, who did not win the presidency in 2000. You're in the state where it happened.
Oh, yeah.
That Democrats did not take that to sort of every extreme and become sovereign citizens and not accept the workings of the government or whatever. But who knows what we're going to get out of this. And of course, Trump is just sort of playing this up for his own amusement and for his own money. I mean, so much of this money he's raised has gone sort of into a personal PAC, not really gone towards fighting the election.
Of course not. No, he's a con man.
He's positioning for a media role or maybe another run at the presidency so that he can avenge himself I'm not going to get into his head, but he is not aware or doesn't care about the consequences of what he has what he has inserted into the election.
No, not at all. And for anyone who didn't understand the concept of scorched earth policy, all you need to do is look at Donald Trump. So David Dayen is with us, and I spoke about you before you came on, but just to give you a proper, when you say we're covering that, David Dayen is the executive editor of the American Prospect magazine. You can get them online at prospect.org. You should read them. They've got amazing coverage of everything, and you've been doing this for years. And you have two books out, and I got to say, at prospect.org, your bio hasn't been updated to include the new book, Monopolized, yet. So someone needs to get on that and fix it.
Edge will roll.
So the new book is great, as was the first one, Chain of Title. But we got through the weekend. The new Congress was sworn in and whatever. Okay, Bernie was rebuffed by his colleagues, which pissed me off, but I'll get over it. Bernie's a big boy. We move on. And then the Washington Post breaks the story about the phone call the previous day to the aforementioned Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of the state of Georgia. And it goes on for an hour with Donald Trump berating him, lying to him and just being pathetic. We won by a huge margin. You need to find those votes. I mean, it's astounding. Now, under normal circumstances, I think articles of impeachment would have already been filed, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think the he kind of sounds like the world's worst mob boss. He's trying to pressure someone, but he has no idea how to do it. So that's kind of amusing to me. The second thing that you bring up is this an impeachable offense? And I think it's pretty clear that it is, and also a criminal offense.
Yeah.
Under state laws and potentially federal laws. So, what do you do about that? The guy's 2 weeks from going out of office. The Georgia thing is important here, though, right? Because of the unsettled nature of the Senate, because these two races are not yet done, and because it won't be settled probably until after the inauguration, because you have to certify the vote, mm-hmm. you have to get everything settled. It's going to take a few weeks. There's nothing really on the calendar between now and January 20th. I mean, there's not really anything going on in Congress. So if there was ever a moment to try to hold Donald Trump accountable for his actions, it's not like you're blocking anything else from happening. Like there's right. not anything else going on. And it might be good to put everybody on the record on the, attempted overturning of this democracy. So my feeling is that why don't you impeach him? Why not?
Yeah.
Well, I guess Hakeem Jeffries said in a phone call today that they're looking forwards and not backwards, which is a familiar phrase that we know from the Obama administration.
Yeah.
But I think it's a mistake. I mean, there's it. there is nothing else that's going that. What is your alternative? What are you going to do otherwise?
Right. And if you don't do something, then you're by attrition, kind of, you're approving of this behavior. You got to hold him accountable. That was the problem, that Bush was never held accountable for all of his crimes and offenses, that because they looked forward and not back. They, meaning the Obama administration, and they can't do that with this guy. He's got to be held accountable, not only for that, but David Dan, you write a lot about this at the American Prospect, the total mishandling, dereliction of duty when it comes to how they dealt with the COVID crisis. I mean, we can look at the timeline. You look back to February where there was, one case that nobody had died yet. And you watch month by month how it escalated. And now 351,000 Americans have died. And he seems to not give a shit. Just like my governor down here, Mo Ron, death sentence, just wants everything wide open. I don't leave my house because he it's business as usual in Florida.
Well, and it's just gone from every facet of this. First, there was a testing failure at the beginning. Then there was a failure to contain. There was a failure in terms of premature reopening of the country. There was, a failure to handle these various surges. And now we have a vaccine and there's a failure in getting the vaccine rolled out.
Yeah, so, now they're talking about having the doses of the Moderna. I mean, I'm sorry. You don't fuck with that stuff, do you?
Well, I actually think that might not be a bad
really?
Idea.
Really? Okay.
For clinical reasons, that literally doubles your supply.
Right, if it's as effective.
Supply problems, and if it's as effective, you absolutely go for it. The problem is that, there are a myriad of problems. I actually wrote about this today at the Prospect. They're holding back a significant number of doses because people need the second dose when there's additional supply coming online. So, why are you holding back these doses and not getting shots into arms as quickly as possible? The federal response has been completely just taken off the field. They essentially drop the allocation in one place in a state and say, you deal with it. State health departments are absolutely strapped. They're putting it on the backs of hospitals who are busy dealing with patients of COVID and can't manage a mass immunization campaign at the same time. You get mistakes in West Virginia where they gave the wrong thing to a bunch of people. They gave antibodies instead of the vaccine. This is a full spectrum failure at the state level, at the federal level, at the local level. And it really needs to be turned around because we now have this mutated variant of the vaccine, which is much more transmissible, which means we'll have exponentially more cases if we don't deal with this by dropping the numbers of hospitalizations through vaccination. And yet we are on just this terrible pace. We've got 4 million shots out in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And if you do the numbers on that in terms of the number of people you actually have to vaccinate, we will have herd immunity by sometime in 2025.
Oh my God.
Right? That is not acceptable. No. We need to move a lot faster and we need to do it right now. And I fear that we're not going to do it until Joe Biden is president.
Oh, without a doubt, because the Trump administration has washed their hands of it because they went along with Scott Atlas and his herd immunity. Just let everyone get it. And, the weak people will die off. Fuck you. I'm seeing the numbers of people dying every day and people that we know. And you're in Southern California where ICU is at zero capacity. They're turning people away from hospitals and starting to ration care. This is the United States of America, right? What happened to American exceptionalism? I guess it died with Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's absolutely disastrous. We're out in Palm Springs right now. We just got
for
out
you.
Of town. Knowing people in L.A. and how dangerous it is there
right now,
some of the transmissible, some of that variant has been found in Southern California now. So, that this could only be a prelude. And of course, between Thanksgiving gatherings, Christmas gatherings, and New Year's gatherings, there are more surges ahead.
Yes, and we haven't even gotten the numbers from the Christmas and New Year's. So there's, as Fauci describes it, there's going to be a surge upon a surge upon a surge. As bad as things are now, and they are, it doesn't seem like they can get any worse, they're going to get worse. I don't understand what people don't get about it. And they walk around and they bitch about masks. I'm sorry. And I'm an old rock and roller, but Eric Clapton and Van Morrison recorded an anti-mask song together. What are they, crazy? God, it makes me nuts. David Dayan, thank you so much for being my first guest of the new year. Your work is just so valuable, and I so appreciate all you do and your time spent with us, too. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Nicole. Let's do it again soon.
I hope so. Thanks again. Have a great rest of your little time off. I hope you're taking some time off and enjoy
I'm
Palm Springs. You are.
My news never stops.
I hear you. I understand. I know it well. David Dayan. Follow him on Twitter at ddayan. And I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Dave. Right. Bye-bye. All right. So there you go. So our first guest of the year. And the news is, I mean, as crazy as I thought. Look, today's, you know, I do this... I do a regular What's News, a 6-minute newscast that runs throughout the day on the Progressive Voices channel. But I start with a giant newscast, and that's what I post as a podcast, a free podcast every day. If you subscribe to my show, you also get What's News every day. Today's runs, let's see how long it is. Today's runs 11 and a half minutes long. So I had to cut half of it for what runs on Progressive Voices. So if you want the full newscast, and there's a lot of stuff there, it's in there. I did use just a tiny clip of that phone call, but I promised myself that I was not going to play any of that Trump audio, because you've heard it all before. You've heard the man lie about everything. He kept listening to little clips of the call with Raffensperger, and he's going, well, we won the election. You know that. We won by... And I'm screaming at the phone, you did not win! Now, I give Brad Raffensperger a lot of credit for not telling him to go fuck himself, but he sat on that phone call for an hour and listened to this man berate him. I would never be able to do that. Never. Someone in the chat room said, what did Clapton do? Eric Clapton and Van Morrison. And I've got a Van Morrison gold record here. I'm a huge Van Morrison fan. I guess I should say I am of his earlier works. They went together, they got together and they wrote and recorded an anti-mask anthem, because your freedoms are being taken away because you're being told to wear a mask. They are both in their mid-70s. If they get COVID, chances are pretty good they're not going to survive. Unless they get, you know, the Trump cocktail, you know, but I don't think either one of them is good friends with Trump, so I don't know that they're going to have access to that. It's just so frustrating that people are so cavalier. Now, Larry King, we learned, was diagnosed as it's Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. He's 87 years old. I have a feeling in the next few days we're going to hear about the death of Larry King as well. Why don't people understand this is serious? And if they just stay home, and if you must venture out, cover up, wear a mask, wear a face shield, wear gloves, protect yourself and protect the people around you so that we can get past this and get back to life as usual, or some semblance of usual. All right. Well, I've got nothing planned for the rest of the show. I've got stuff. I've got news I can go through for sure. And we can open up the phones and get your thoughts on all that's transpired over the last few days. I'll tell you what, we'll do a quick timeout for our friends at the Progressive Voices Network, if this will work, because I forgot to. Oh, I didn't test this system yet. Hold on one second. Let me see if this is going to work today. It may not. Let me just try one thing. And if not, then we just won't take a break today. All right. So let me do this real quickly. We'll see if it works. If so, we'll be right back on the Progressive Voices Network. And yes, it looks like they went to commercial. I never know if they really do or not. But, you know, I'm trying to uphold my part of the deal. All right. For everyone who's still with us, How about something funny? I think we could use something funny right about now, don't you? You know what? Let's do this one from our pal, Lauren Mayer, because tomorrow is Election Day in Georgia. So this gives us one more time, one more chance to play this lovely composition that she wrote and recorded for us. And it's called Warnocking My Oss Off. Get it?
Sure, it's great to celebrate how Georgia's turning blue. Biden won, but we're not done. We've still got work to do. With two upcoming runoffs, the Senate's still in flux. Against two grifty, lying, shifty, corrupt, self-dealing schmucks. So in order to get rid of these incumbent jerks, I'm warnocking my ass off to get a Senate that actually works. Warnocking my ass off, we can all pitch in. Donate to their websites, that's a good place to begin. Flipping the Senate's doable, but won't be easy to toss off when the fabric of democracy's been torn. So I'm warnocking my ass off. Reverend Raphael Warnock is experienced, smart, respected. He should beat Loeffler, such a ditz, who's never even been elected. John Ossoff is a journalist and healthcare advocate, too. Against that racist, anti-Semitic, inside traitor, Purdue. And making sure these GOP monstrosities are gone will mean warnocking our Ossoff. Also gets rid of Mitch McConnell. Warnocking my Ossoff, it won't take you long. Do postcards, voter outreach, bake cupcakes, write a song. If we fight, then we can ride the chance of a tragic loss off and show all those obstructionists our scorn by warnocking our Ossoff. MAGA cult's not satisfied with the recount and the audit. They think the runoff's rigged and now are threatening to boycott it. GOP infighting comes right down from the top, to which our response should be, oh no, don't stop. So let's help them spread their dumb conspiracy theory when it helps us warnock our ass off to finally flip the Senate. So I'm warnocking my ass off. It's so necessary to bring back basic decency on the 5th of January. One more step towards restoring our democracy we can cross off, and functioning government can be reborn. So I'm warnocking my ass off. Oh yeah, I'm warnocking my ass off.
Warnocking my ass off.
I'm out in Georgia, warnocking my ass off.
Love it. That is Lauren Mayer warnocking my ass off.
And now, back to Nicole on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Yeah, Lauren Mayer is a friend of the show. In fact, on Tuesdays when Gotta Laugh is here, Lauren Mayer did our little intro tune. So you'll listen for that tomorrow. She's a regular and she's awesome. And someone in the chat room just said that she's being threatened. Her presence on Facebook is being threatened. Look, I played a parody last week by Shirley Sherban from New Zealand and got, our caller hung up. I was about to go to the phones. Susan, who I know from New Mexico, called in, and I was just about to go to her. So, Susan, call back in. 954-889-6410, by the way, is the number, and I'm on Skype at Nicole Sandler if you would like to check in. But my video from the show, because I used a clip from, I even forget what it was, some Disney movie or something. They blacked out. It wasn't even that. It was a parody of a Fleetwood Mac song that she did. And Warner Brothers just, they didn't copyright violate me in terms of giving me a copyright strike on my account, so I'm not banned from YouTube again. But they blacked out the video of that show, and I challenged it because I could have edited the song out, which is what I should have done, so the video would be live on YouTube. But I, you know, that's bullshit. So I challenged it, saying this is not the Fleetwood Mac song; it's a parody by Shirley Chaban, and you need to let it go through because there's something called fair use. So I'm fighting with them again, which is, you know, what I tend to do. Anyway, I'm sorry I missed the call from Susan, because Susan is an artist living in Santa Fe. And I got to know her because when I started painting, Susan contacted me, and she's an artist, and gave me some pointers and some encouragement. By the way, if for those of you watching on YouTube, if you look behind me, you can't see it because it's in the background, but there's one of my newest paintings. I was very busy this weekend. It's two dogs. Let me see if I can zoom in on it, if the camera will let me do this. So it's a black lab and a pity on the beach, looking at the sunrise. So my painting career seems to be taking off, even if the radio thing isn't always doing so great. All right. If you want to call in and have some New Year thoughts about the insane situation that's going on right now, by all means, please do. The number is 954-889-6410. Again, if you're on Skype, you can just Skype in to Nicole Sandler. Are all Susan's artists? I don't know. I know this one who is. So while we're waiting on that, I'll go through some of the other news. Oh, and Diane Russell in the YouTube chat room, she is an artist. I mean, this woman can like paint people and stuff. And Diane, I noticed a little while ago, posted a photo of Trombone Shorty. Well, Diane Russell, I emailed you a link to an interview from a station I worked at back in 1996 when Michelle Schacht was in the studio. I didn't do the interview. One of the other jocks did. But a 10-year-old Trombone Shorty was in studio playing with her. So Diane, hopefully you got that email and you can listen to that interview, and I want to hear your reaction because I know you're a big Trombone Shorty fan. All right, so I said we'd go to the phones, and we haven't heard from this listener in a long time, although I did talk to him all the time because it's my husband. Hi, David. Happy anniversary.
Hi, I'm calling from the east side of the house.
Yes. Hello.
And I have to disagree with something that you and David Dayan said. The whole thing about impeaching Trump,
yeah.
I would prefer that they don't impeach him, and here's why.
Okay.
If he gets impeached, he can't run for president in 2024. Now, that sounds like a good thing, but it's actually not. It's a better thing if he can run for president, because that freezes the Josh Hawleys and Little Macros and every other moron like Rafael Cruz.
That's true.
Who fancies himself as a future president. And that would benefit the world much more than saying to Trump, you can't run anymore, because he's still going to be, you know, like the monkey in the zoo flinging poo.
Yes, he is. And I was thinking that one of his spawn were going to be running, you know, Don Jr. or Ivanka, because they think that they can.
Yeah, that they're the Bushes.
Yeah, right. It's the next political dynasty, right?
Exactly. I would prefer that they, you know, not be able to do that for at least a few more years, because they think that that the Trump version of Papa Doc Bush is still out there as a viable candidate.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
All right, Jackson is barking his ass off, so I got to go get him.
Okay, go get him.
Oh, wait, he's barking his ass off.
There you go. Barking his ass off. He's Warnocking his ass off.
Love you, Matt.
All right.
Bye.
Love you too. Bye. So that was my husband, David. Oh, and now I see our Susan is back. Susan from New Mexico. Hi, and Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year. Happy anniversary. Happy,
thank you.
Nicole.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling is I just sent you an email of, oh my fucking God, Karen Pence must have painted that piece of shit that I just sent you. Have you seen that painting?
No, but I need to put this up on the screen. Hold on one second. Oh, I will. For those, you know, and here's, I'm sorry for those of you who are just listening to the audio, because this is a visual. So as I save this image and then bring it up on the screen, I will try to describe it. So somebody got artistic here, right? This is somebody's interpretation. It's a painting of what Trump
more
has,
like autistic.
Yes, I think you're right. All right, so I'm going to try to bring it up here. It is Trump on a cross, with just a flag draped around his nether regions. You could tell it was painted by a fan because his gut is entirely not big enough, and he's got muscles on his arm. This is not Donald Trump's body. I don't need
I'm
to ever see it. And then it's got Melania. I don't know what she's doing at his feet. She's doing something at his feet. And Nancy Pelosi?
Melania Magdalene, we call her.
Oh, okay. Or melanoma or malaria. And then I guess that's supposed to be Nancy Pelosi poking at his nipples with a fire iron or something. I don't know.
Yeah, a spear.
That look about right? I'm moving as fast as I can to bring up this picture. Hold on one second. For those of you who are watching a video feed, and by the way, we're streaming on YouTube, on Periscope, on Facebook Live, and on Twitch. So, and the show, the video will be posted afterwards. I always post the podcast, and I always post the video, like a funny video. I'll post the Lauren Mayer video. I post the YouTube video. I'll post this photo there as well, if I can ever get it up here on the screen. This is quite, I mean, if you can, what happened to it? It didn't save Trump. Oh, there it is. Okay. Hold on. Here we go. I just have to add an audio element to it so that people can hear us talking when I switch it. Okay. Get ready, you video viewers. Here we go. Yeah, this is frightening. And they have it next to a ruler. So you can see that this is like a really, it's like a 3 foot high painting.
I'll let you go. I just had to put that out there. You know, I was just so, yeah. I was like,
hey, you know, us painters, we got to stick together. This is all kinds of disturbing, not awesome, but disturbing. It's just very, very disturbing. Susan,
I wonder how much the artist was paid for it, because I certainly could use some money from.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You should follow this Alex Cole guy. And it says, follow me on Instagram for MAGA craziness. That's OK. I've had enough craziness from the MAGA people. But yeah, it's out there.
Anyway,
it's out there.
Anyway, paint on. I want all of your listeners and viewers to know that you actually have talent.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Susan, you provided some of my early encouragement. Like, I've been at it for so long. I've been at it since October.
I'm here to encourage you. What else can I fucking do?
I hear you. Thank you. I appreciate the encouragement.
Right. I got to get back to my painting that I'm never going to sell. Bye-bye.
Bye, Susan. Yeah, so Susan is an artist. She and her partner live in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And see, that was my mistake. I moved to Taos, New Mexico. I should have tried Santa Fe. Taos was not for me. It was a big disaster many years ago. But anyway, all right. So phone lines are open should you care to check in. As you can tell, we're kind of loosey-goosey today. You know, until we get past tomorrow, and then we get past Wednesday, and then we get past January 20th, I will not rest easily. But let me share with you, someone else. Does Susan have a website? I don't believe she does. But Susan, if you do have a website, please share it with me. I don't have it in my studio. She sent me a beautiful little book of beautiful seascapes she does, like paintings of Fire Island and the ocean, and just so calming. And that's what I really love about the painting, in case you were wondering. It's very meditative for me. I always have to be doing something. If I'm watching television, I still have to do something, like with my hands, because I'm ADD and I have attention deficit disorder, and I just have to be doing more than one thing at a time, I guess. I don't know. Going back to the phones, to the 805 area code. Were you talking to someone in Southern California?
This is my name's Dan from Goleta.
Hey, Dan from Goleta. Goleta is near Santa Barbara. Yeah. It's beautiful there.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to tell you, like, for me, like, 2020 doesn't end until, like, January 20th.
Yeah.
But I'll give you, I just want to tell you a quick story. You talked about a tough year. About a year ago, I found a lump in my groin area.
Oh, God.
And then due to HMO and delays and getting referrals and everything, I didn't see a surgeon until March 19th. Right as everything's shutting down.
Oh, no.
And we were afraid we were going to get bumped because they were shutting everything down so fast. So they got us in a last-minute appointment, March 19th. Surgeon couldn't figure out what it was. He said, schedule me for emergency surgery on March 20th, the next day. March 25th, the results came back. It was a third-stage internal melanoma cancer.
Oh, my God.
Extremely rare yeah. cancer. We had two dermatologists look at it. One said in 30 years of practice, he's been lucky if he's seen 10 of these cases. The other dermatologist said he sees like one melanoma a day, like every day of the week. Internal melanomas in 30 years, he doubts he's even seen 10.
Oh my God.
Anyway, let's put everything in perspective. So for me, this 2020 was like cancer, COVID, and Trump. Could you ever make it worse, like trio of things occurring to you? So talk about stress and, just going to bed at night and wondering. Anyway, they wanted to put me on chemo drugs, and I'm very, like, health conscious. And so we basically decided to go, my wife and I, just she wanted to see me go through all the side effects. And so, you know, we just basically pursued a diet approach and mental and physical combined. And anyway, so 9 months and 15 days since the surgery, but who's counting? And things are still stable. And
good.
I get scanned again in March. But anyway, so I've just been thinking about people like complaining so much about like these COVID restrictions and these basically crybabies and wearing masks. And I'm thinking, people, you know, you don't know anything about stress. Are you kidding me? I wish I just had, like, COVID to think about this past year. Well, since you're a cancer person, you know, you wake up every, especially after the surgery, you wake up and you think, oh, God, do I have a month
and
left?
And you know what? And I still have what they do with, in my case, with lung cancer, that we caught it really early. I had two separate tumors in two different lobes of my left lung. So they were separate, right? So they did two different things. But I didn't need chemo or radiation because they caught it so early, but I get a CAT scan every quarter. Now it's every 6 months. I just had my CAT scan last week. I see the doctor in a couple of weeks. And then I have one more in August. It'll be 5 years, at which time they'll proclaim I was cured. But a friend of mine who was cured, had a breast cancer like 10 years ago, was just diagnosed with a metastasis in her brain. So you're never free and clear. You're even never, when they think you are.
Exactly. No. Believe me, I'm 68 years old, and so it's like another like kind of life lesson, and you have to learn how to deal with it mentally, and you know, and the physical. Like I'm saying,
sorry.
You know,
and
diet
what
approach? But good, and, you know, so far,
good
so
for
good.
You. Have you checked out
and
the RSO?
A lot of it's mental. And you know, the original oncologist was just trying to pressure me. Into getting, like, taking these chemo drugs and...
Oh, if you don't need them,
God.
Don't.
I mean, you know how it is after your surgery, you're hurting, you're aching, and then all of a sudden this oncologist comes back and says, oh, well, it doesn't look like anything spread, but we want to start taking these drugs tomorrow. I mean, he's talking to me, like, April 2nd, and he's, like, saying, I want you to start taking them April 3rd. And, you know, you're in pain from the surgery. I had bad reactions to antibiotics.
Oh, God.
I mean, they messed the whole thing up. They said I was on my charts, I was allergic to penicillin, which I don't think I am, but they gave me an antibiotic that I was allergic to. So for 2 weeks, I had a rash from my neck to my thigh.
Oh, my God.
That was the worst poison oak you could imagine. I mean, I couldn't sleep because it was itching so bad. And I mean, I was almost ready to pull the plug just from the discomfort from the side effects of the antibiotics.
Right. And you have people bitching that they have to wear a mask when you have to go out to do whatever you have to do. Other people not wearing a mask puts you in danger. That's the problem.
Yeah, tell me about
here.
It. I'm so over this. I mean, that's it. Cancer, COVID, and Trump.
Yeah.
These belly achers. I mean, just go away. I mean,
exactly.
Just go away. Just go away, fat old man. Just go away.
Please.
Just go away.
Please.
Just go away. I'm tired.
I hear you.
You know, I've had enough mental stress, and then deal with this idiot, this big baby, this big crybaby. I mean,
I hear. All right. I'm going to try to get another call. Thank you so much for calling.
Take care of yourself. Okay. Thanks for connecting.
Thank you.
And okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. All right. We have another New Mexico call. Here. I see a 505 area code. Where are you calling from?
Santa Fe.
From Santa Fe. See, I screwed up by going to Taos, didn't I?
Well, it's close. Taos is close.
I know, but I probably would have enjoyed living in Santa Fe. I did not like Taos. I lasted 4 months there. Who is this? What's your name?
Taos is a little piece of heaven, if you ask me, but...
It's a nice place to visit. It's tough to live there. It's like a third world country. It's very expensive to live there, but you can't earn a decent living. And I moved there shortly after I became a mom. So I had a new daughter who I adopted and moved to Taos where I knew nobody. So it was not the smartest move. Anyway, that's not what you called about. So what's on your mind?
Well, I was wondering if you reconsidered your use of profanity, particularly the F-bomb.
Oh, is this my old friend from, you're not the guy from Albuquerque. What's your name?
Mike, Santa Fe.
Mike from Santa Fe. Okay, so you're not the guy from Albuquerque who called cursing me out. That's how I talk. And you know what? If a radio station wants to...
It's kind of embarrassing for real liberals.
It's what? It's embarrassing for real liberals. Okay. Thanks for your call. Bye. Sorry. You know, this is how I talk. And if a radio station wanted to hire me and, like, pay me money... to be on their air, which is how it used to work in the old days, I have no problem with not cursing. But because I work for myself, I am under no FCC regulations telling me that there are 7 dirty words you can't say on the radio. Shit, piss, funk, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. Thank you, George Carlin. And those words, if you say any of them, can get you fined hundreds of thousands of dollars if you utter them on over-the-air radio. So I don't. But right now, nobody's paying me to be on over-the-air radio, so I'll say whatever the fuck I want. Hi, who's this?
Hey, this is Tripp in South Florida.
Hey,
and I
Tripp.
I just want to cleanse the palate of the program after that last caller. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Tripp.
2021. So we are blessed to have you, and hopefully we'll have something I think will be a big surprise in Georgia tomorrow. Man, I'm here for it.
Please.
Thank you for standing up, as you always do, Nicole.
Anytime. And Tripp, thank you. Tripp's been with me for so many years, and you're thank you. And even though you're here in South Florida, and we've talked about we are going to get together for dinner before COVID, you work too much, and we never could. And now COVID, so we don't go out. But one of these years... we will have a gathering.
We're definitely getting together, you, I, and your CEO, and that beautiful, beautiful grown-up daughter of yours.
I know. Do you believe it? My daughter is 21 now. My little baby girl, who I just adopted a snap of the finger ago, is now 21. Yeah, life goes quickly.
Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you, Tripp. I appreciate the phone call and the palate cleanser. Bye. Yeah, you know, look, I'm open. I'm available. I'll happily put this show back on terrestrial radio. Look, I worked in radio, over-the-air radio, for 40 years or something like that. I've only cursed on the air once. I told the story when Harry Shearer was on with me a couple of weeks ago. I was working at KLOS in Los Angeles. I was producing the Mark and Brian show. They were on vacation over the holidays, so I was hosting a best of program. And because it was a best of and their stuff was on tape, I wasn't running in delay because... tape's not going to say anything bad, and I'm not going to say anything bad. And Michael McKeon called in to the station on the hotline, the studio hotline, in the character of David St. Hubbins, the guitar player from Spinal Tap. He was cracking me up on the phone. I said, let me put you on the air. So I put him on the air, and he started talking about a charity event he was involved in, which was great. And then he said, I have an idea for a suggestion for an adventure for Mark and Brian. At the time, they had a TV show on NBC television, a network television show, The Adventures of Mark and Brian, where they would do these cool stunts. And I said, oh, really? What is it? And he said, they should go on the Howard Stern show. Howard Stern had just hit the air in Los Angeles. We never talked about him. He targeted us because we were number one. He went after us. He wound up beating us. But we never acknowledged his existence. We just ignored him. And I went, okay, thank you for calling. Bye, 95.5 KLOS. I hit the commercial, and then I went, shit! And one of the switchboarders came running in from the room next door and said, your mic is still on. And my general manager looked at me, knowing me full well, and he said, at least you didn't say fuck. All right. If you're in Georgia, get out and vote. We'll be back tomorrow. It's Tuesday. Got a Laugh will be here. We'll see you then. Go, Georgia! Go us. Happy New Year, everyone.